Hello and welcome to the Keeper Cut Podcast, a proud member of the Pitcher List Podcast Network. Reminder, you can always find us anywhere you listen to podcasts. Leave us ratings, reviews. You can also find us on Twitter at Keep or Cut. This is Chad Young, joined as always by Pete Ball. And Pete, we're getting back into our positional previews. Took a little detour last week with a mailbag.
Yeah, that was a fun episode. I enjoyed the questions. Thanks everybody for submitting those. It's fun seeing how, like, you know, we're now almost 100 episodes in. We have more and more people asking questions. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, episode 87 today. So, wow. and I always enjoy those episodes because I, like, we've talked about this on the show before, but like one of my favorite things about keeper leagues is that every keeper league is unique. And I just like hearing like, oh, here's the guys I'm considering, but here's like three random things about my league and the way we handle keepers that you need to be aware of or else you can't actually make a decision. It's like, oh, interesting. That's a cool rule. And like for our listener leagues right now, as we're going through our offseason, we're having a rules debate, a rules change. We've had a couple rule changes in League 2, and we got another one that we're sort of finishing up right now. So it's always interesting hearing what other people do for their rules, because can influence us as well. So
for sure.
But that's not what we're here for today. Today is outfield day. We'll start with outfield, and then depending on how much time we have, Pete, I mean, we're in the midst of draft season already. We had keepers due for our two listener leagues. We've already had keepers due for our new leagues. We've already done one auto new draft, and we are in the middle of another, literally as we are recording right now. It's because it's a slow draft and so slow auction, and so we can record while timers are ticking down. But yeah, lots to talk about. So let's start off with the outfield though, and then we'll get into some of this other stuff that is going on. As with the other positions, we'll go through our top 10s. These are top 10s for keeper leagues. As always, we assume sort of standard 5x5, assume some sort of a keeper cost, right? I think, you know, we've talked about this before, but if there's no cost to keepers, then it changes the game a little bit. We also have assumed that there's a relatively deep bench of keepers, deep pool of keepers, I guess I would say. Again, another thing we've talked about in the past, but like if you're in a league that keeps three and there's no cost associated with it, the rankings don't really matter past the top view, because you're only keeping, you know, your first, second, third round picks anyways. If there's a cost associated with it, it gets more interesting to see like, okay, who's got more valuable, who's gotten more valuable over the last year, who's gotten less valuable over the last year. And if there's, you know, keeping eight, keeping nine, keeping 10 people, let alone in like an auto new league or a true dynasty league where you could be keeping 20, 25, 30, then those rankings matter a lot more further down. But outfield, I mean, realistically, your top 10 keeper outfielders, like even in a keep three, you could be keeping all of these guys, could get kept, right? A league keeping 36, 37 players, 10 outfielders being kept isn't crazy.
No, not at all. I think in my leagues where there's no cost associated with keepers, I'm pretty sure that all 10 of the guys on my list and all 10 of the guys on your list are all being kept. So that is for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And so let's go through those lists. And I'm actually going to do it a little bit differently this time, because usually I like read through Pete's list and I read through my list. But we have the same top nine, but in a different order. And then we have different number 10s. So there are really only 11 guys between us that we listed here. And I think it's one of the things we'll talk about in a moment. But the nine guys we both have are, and I'll read it in Pete's order first. Actually, I'm going to do this sort of back and forth. We have the same top two. You put Acuña Jr. first. I put him second. I put Julio Rodriguez first. You put him second. Our 3, 4, 5 are also the same, but in a different order. I went Judge, Tucker, Tatis. You went Tatis, Judge, Tucker. And then our 6, let's see, what is it? It's our 6, 7, and 8. No, 7, 8. Wait, hold on. Now I'm losing track of what I'm doing here. Our 6 and 7. Sorry. All right. We got this now. Don't worry. Our 6 and 7 are the same, but in different order. You went with Soto over Yordan Alvarez. I went with Alvarez over Soto. I'm already regretting that a little bit. And then we have the same 8 and 9. We both have Betts 8, Trout 9. And then our number 10, I have Michael Harris. You've got Luis Robert. So that was a little confusing. Let me read through Pete's list and then my list here. Ronald Acuña Jr., Julio Rodriguez, Fernando Tatis Jr., Aaron Judge, Kyle Tucker, Juan Soto, Yordan Alvarez, Mookie Betts, Mike Trout, Luis Robert for Pete. For me, J-Rod, Acuna, Judge, Tucker, Tatis, Yordan, Soto, Betts, Trout, and Harris. So we can sort of debate some of these, you know, one versus two, things like that. I think there's some, it'll be interesting to talk about that. But the first thing I want to start with is we have literally 11 guys between us. That's it. That's, I think, like, we have very rarely only had one different player. And usually you're looking at shallower positions. So in a deeper position, you'd expect more variety here. But I looked at this and it's like, yeah, I could see moving Robert up. I could see moving Harris off my list. I really couldn't think of any other candidate for one of those 10 spots. I don't think there's anyone else I really seriously considered. And I just like, that seems interesting to me. Like it's surprising to me that it is such a shallow pool of guys who even are in consideration for top 10.
Yeah, no, that actually makes a lot of sense to me. I think part of it is there's been such a premium put on speed over the last few years that those guys like Eloy, maybe Teoscar Hernandez, even though he's good to steal a couple bases, certainly Nick Castellanos before this most recent year, like obviously this most recent year, he's kind of fallen off. But before that, he wasn't quite in that super expensive group because he didn't provide speed. I think you'll find that with all of these names, unless they are just like one of the best pure hitters in baseball, like Soto, Judge, and Alvarez, they're such outliers that that's kind of the common denominator you need to get speed out of your early outfielders. And so that really limits the pool, at least now. Who knows what the conversation will be next year with the rule changes. And I think speed is going to kind of be up across the board. And that's certainly not an original thought in the fantasy community. It's just one that I tend to concur with.
Yeah. And I'm looking now at NFBC ADP. I've filtered it down to outfielders and drafts over the last 2 weeks. And the top of the NFBC ADP is, it's my 10. It's not my 10 in order necessarily, but it is the same 10 guys. Robert is 13th. 11th. Well, number 12 on that list is Dalton Varsho, but that is obviously like he wouldn't be the 12th outfielder off the board in NFBC. He's just looks like it because he's a catcher. But number 11 is Randy Arozarena. So I went with Harris as my number 10. He's number 10 here. You went with Robert. He's number 13. We can ignore Varsho. Neither of us considered Randy. Should we have? Was it a mistake to not consider him?
I had to consider him just because I feel like I've just missed out on him so much. I wrote up about him last year that he was a bust, and obviously that didn't work out. He's a guy I've never rostered. I think he's one of those players, kind of like Altuve, that's shown that he can outperform his expected statistics with his athleticism and his just, he's a BABIP guy. Those guys are always kind of hard to pin down. Last year, a BABIP of 325. The year before that, a BABIP of 363. It's almost like it reminds me of the Javier Baez days where it's like, do you want to continue to roll the dice that he's going to continue to put up that kind of BABIP, or are you going to be a little cool on him? And just because I think Luis Robert, assuming he plays a full season, which is a ridiculous assumption at this point, I think he's a much better player.
Sure.
And definitely a better hitter. But Arozarena, sure. I mean, hey, how can you disagree with 20 homers and 32 stolen bases? Like he was awesome last season for fantasy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of Randy for 5x5. I'm actually a sort of fan of him for fantasy in general. I think one of those leagues that I mentioned that we're drafting right now, the one with the slow auction going on right now, is this Auto-New Podcasters League that Derek Van Riper of The Athletic set up. We'll talk more about this league because it's a great group of people. I'm super excited about it. But I spent $22 on Randy. I was pretty happy with that price. I think for a guy who's a, you know, if you look at his NFBC ADP, if you look about what we're talking about now, a borderline top 10 outfielder, like I was really happy with that price on him. I paid the same price for Brian Reynolds, who's more like a top 20 outfielder, I think, for 5x5. And I was happy with that, too. So I'm excited about him. I like Randy. For me, the reason I couldn't bring myself to strongly consider him for my top 10 is I'm not sure how much I believe in the skills long term. He chases a decent amount. He is, you know, last year he brought his strikeout rate down to 24.2%, but it's been up closer to 28, 29, 30%. And he doesn't have enough power to make up for that, right? Like if you're striking out 30% of the time, but hitting 40 bombs, so be it. If you're striking out 28% of the time, like he has traditionally in hitting 20 home runs, it's a little bit iffier. And so, I don't know. I worry that as he ages, if he doesn't run as much, things like that, if the bat speed slows down a little bit, it's just, it feels like a profile that could degrade more than some of the others. And, you know, I preface this by pointing out that I just picked him up for a decent price in a league. Like, I am high on Randy Arozarena. I don't want to make it sound like I'm like, oh, fade Randy. He's terrible. Like, I have no issue with him going where he's going in drafts. I just, from a keeper perspective, long term, he strikes me as the kind of guy who, like, we're going to look up in like June or July one year and be like, oh, he's kind of done. And it'll catch us by surprise when it happens. And so I tend to fade that profile a bit in keeper formats. And so that's why he's a little lower for me.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of that. And that's a lot of the concerns that I've had about Randy Arozarena. And I think that was part of my write-up last year. It's just, I look at the other two names there, the one that you have and the one that I have at number 10, they're actually kind of similar in that there's a chase problem. They don't get on base by walking. Maybe they're going to be a little too BABIP dependent. The one key difference, and I guess this is why I went with Luis Robert over both of Michael Harris Jr. and Randy Arozarena, is that his ground ball rate is not nearly as bad. Both Randy Arozarena and especially Michael Harris Jr. had exorbitant ground ball rates last year. I mean, Michael Harris is with 56%. So, I mean, we can circle it back to Randy Arozarena, but did I consider him? He's so similar to Michael Harris Jr., just older. And there's definitely more power with Harris Jr., at least what we saw in that very, very small sample. I hesitate to say there's that much more power, because I do think Arozarena could hit more than 20 homers next year if he figures out that ground ball rate. But That's kind of why I went Robert, and I'm with you on Arozarena. Yeah. I like him, just not that.
Yeah, I think that the thing with Harris that's different for me, there's sort of a couple things. One is he's run higher walk rates in the minors and lower strikeout rates. So his track record on plate discipline suggests he could improve from where he was as a rookie. And while you said the same but older, one of the big differences with older is, like, Harris isn't even 22 yet. So I'm not ready to call him a finished product. Now, that is not to say that Randy Arozarena at, you know, almost 28, I mean, they're almost exactly 6 years apart, but at almost 28, it's not like Arozarena can't improve, but it's much more likely that what we're looking at with Arozarena is a finished product. I don't know that that's true with Harris, given what I see in the minors. The other is Arozarena has hit 20 home runs each of the last two seasons in 604 and 645 plate appearances. Harris hit 19 as a rookie in 441 plate appearances. So I do think there's more power there. And yes, I agree, Arozarena could hit for more power as well. But to me, there's a little bit more room for growth, and Harris doesn't have to grow to catch Arozarena. So that's if neither of them develops or changes from where they are, they're pretty equal. And I think there's a better chance of Harris getting to another level.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think if there's costs associated with keepers in your league and you're drafting fresh, there's very little chance I'm going to end up with Michael Harris Jr. I think that's right around where I want to address maybe second base, or if one of the elite starting pitchers fell, maybe then. But yeah, I think I'm more likely to have Arozarena even in keeper leagues if we're drafting fresh than Harris Jr. I'm cooling on.
Yeah, I mean, and they're going, like, if I look at NFBC ADP, Harris is going 25th. So, you know, right at the turn, end of the second, start of the third round. Arozarena is going 36th. So now you're getting end of the third, start of the fourth round. That's a pretty different spot, right? I mean, if you're drafting, let's say, 11th on a 12-teamer, and you want Harris, you might be able to get him with your third round pick, but you probably have to take him in the second. Arozarena, you might get in the fourth. And especially when you start thinking about keeper costs, that's a pretty significant difference, right? You could be talking about, like, if you have to grab Harris in the second and or instead hope that Arozarena falls to you in the fourth, you're talking about a third versus a first round pick potentially as your cost if the cost is a round up. Like, that's a pretty big difference. That makes a ton of sense in startup keeper leagues. There isn't that long-term upside with Harris because he's so expensive. So let's jump back to the top of our top 10s. And we both had Julio Rodriguez and Ronald Acuña Jr. as our top two. I had him in that order. You had him the opposite. make the case for Acuna over J-Rod.
Sure. Well, at the recent trade stuff, I'm not going to lie, actually has me maybe a little concerned. Who knows how substantiated that is?
I don't think that's real.
It's probably just because, I hope not. I just spent $59 on him in that auction we're in. So, you know, hopefully that's all fine. I don't know. I'm happy with either. I'll make a case for Acuna Jr. Obviously, a longer track record, though, and I think when you're talking about a player of Julio Rodriguez's caliber, I don't even care about track record. I don't know if you saw that epic home run trot he had in Venezuela and a month ago or so. He hit a home run left-handed. Like, he's in pretty freakish shape at the moment. He said
he hit a home run left-handed.
This is from at
Julio Rodriguez.
Yeah, just for
hit a left-handed home run.
No.
Ronald Acuna did.
Julio Rodriguez hits a lot of left-handed home.
No, they're both righties, aren't they?
Oh, I thought Julio was.
I think they're...
Isn't Julio a lefty?
Fangraph says he's a righty. I'm going to trust them over your memory. No.
Then I got that
but
right. Yeah.
Either way,
but Acuna,
they're both righties. Either Acuna way, hitting a lefty home run is something. That's crazy. Anyways, go on.
Yeah. And he was quoted, this is from at Justin C. Toscano on Twitter. He said, I'm feeling 100%. I'm ready to go back to normal. I definitely don't want to play DH anymore. He seems like a guy who's just like chomping at the bit.
Yeah.
And he was pretty close to... I mean, all of a sudden, third base was getting questionable, so Joe Ram passed him. But before the ACL tear, Acuna was like as number one of the number one overall pick as there was. Like, he was a pretty safe pick at number one. So you look at the steamer projections, which, you know, take them with a grain of salt, but 109 runs, 31 homers, 81 RBI, 35 steals, and a 270 average. And this is just his age 25 season. Like, that, age doesn't come into me that...
Yeah.
Come into a factor for me. His walk rate skyrocketed before his injury, becoming more of a complete hitter. And for what it's worth, his whiff percentage last year was about league average at 25%. I think that's important for him. It was the lowest of his career, despite clearly like pressing and chasing more to find his groove. So I think he's just primed for a monster season. That lineup is so good. It's a much better place to hit than what Julio Rodriguez is going to have to deal with in Seattle. So I'd take Acuna, but I'd gladly, if I have to take Rodriguez number two, that's fine.
All right. So my issue with Acuna, and really the reason I have him second, and you know, maybe this is an overreaction to one season, but last year he was chasing more, he was hitting more ground balls. And if you dig more into what was going on, there were a couple of things that are a little concerning about that. One is his increased swing rate was almost entirely down. And his increase in chase rate was almost entirely out of the zone down. So that, like, it wasn't just that he was swinging more. He had shifted his approach in some way to be more aggressive down in the zone, which is, I don't think, a productive place for him to be. And is probably tied to why he's hitting more ground balls. That chase rate was also increasing as the season goes on, right? So if you look at a rolling chart of his chase rate, it's increasing as the season goes on. So there's a little bit of a, I don't know, when I mention his chase rate, you get a little bit of a narrative of like, oh, he's coming back from the injury, he was pressing, blah, 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 which makes sense. But it got worse, not better, right? It wasn't like he was pressing and then he settled in and look how great he was. He was pressing and then he started pressing more, maybe, I don't know. And I think that's enough for me to nudge Rodriguez up, given how good Rodriguez was last year and the fact that, you know, sort of like we talked about with Harris a moment ago, like, I don't know that it's a given that we've seen everything there is to see from J-Rod, right? He's 22 in a month at this point, 22 a month and a half. So he's still young and he is already being... You know, he is not like a clear-cut first overall pick, but his ADP is third among outfielders after Acuna and Judge, and he has been picked as early as first and as late as sixth. That is the same as Acuna, that's the same as Judge in NFBC over the last 2 weeks. So he is already a guy who we're like, yeah, I mean, he's right in there with those top guys, and there might be more coming. So... That to me, plus the slight issues from Acuna last year, is just enough to nudge him to first.
So I get that. And like, again, I'm not really in the interest of arguing against Julio Rodriguez, But if the knock against Acuña is a plate discipline issue that seemed to escalate as the year went on last year, I mean, Julio Rodriguez was chasing more than Acuña when Acuña was at his worst that we've seen him when it comes to chase. And actually, it wasn't really that close. I mean, if we're saying that Acuña's chase rate last year, 24.3%, was the worst of his career, which it was, 5 years of play, Julio Rodriguez's chase rate last year was 33.5%. So, I mean, again, I'd gladly take either, but I'm looking at Acuña as like, if that's my worst case scenario with Acuña, because I don't really have a reason to think he's going to be worse than he was last year. I don't know what reasoning could be for him to be worse. We've seen what I think his floor is. I'm just more comfortable taking him, but I'd gladly take either. I would be surprised if, given the progress we've seen from Acuña in terms of his walk rate, I'd be surprised if he ends up with a worse strikeout rate than Julio Rodriguez next year. I think it's going to be close. Yeah. I would bet my money on him having a better strikeout rate.
That makes sense. And I think you are absolutely right. That's probably his floor, but he also wasn't as good as Rodriguez last year. Right? It wasn't just like he chased less for sure, but the overall line just wasn't as good. So that's sort of where I am. But I honestly think it's splitting hairs a little bit, right? Like, if you want to tell me you'd rather have Acuña, I'm not going to tell you shouldn't. Like, that's a totally reasonable place to be. There was a tweet earlier today getting sent around about, like, you know, this I think probably dubious, or this probably not real Acuña trade rumor. And there was a Yankees fan, because it's always a Yankees fan, it was like, who would you trade for Acuña? Everyone except Volpe? And it's like, and I think it was Eric Cross replied or quote tweeted. It was like, this is such a silly thing, but like, and you know, Eric's a Red Sox fan. He's like, they could have the system. They could have every prospect we have. I would send our entire farm to Atlanta to get Acuña on our team. And like, that's totally reasonable. That's a perfectly reasonable reaction. So I'm not going to tell you that you should be switching them either. So let's look a little further down our list. We both had Judge, Tucker, and Tatis as our next three. You had Tatis over Judge and over Tucker. I had him after both of them. I had Judge, Tucker, Tatis. You had Tatis, Judge, Tucker. I mean, given it seems aggressive to me. Like, you know, obviously we have a longer track record than the last 12 months or the last 18 months for that matter. But over the last 18 months, what's happened is you've had one guy set the American League home run record, and the other guy has not played baseball in forever because he can't get out of his own way long enough to stay on the field. I find it, I get it. I get what Tatis's ceiling is. I don't know. It took a lot for me to put him in at number five instead of dropping him much lower on my list. But you put him ahead of Judge.
Yeah. I mean, at number one, it is keeper league rankings. And I think, you know, I expect Aaron Judge to hit 60 homers a season because I'm a Red Sox fan, but there's a couple things at play there, right? He is significantly older than Tatis Jr. And while he is my number one player in head-to-head, which I've talked about in the past, my mindset with head-to-head categories as opposed to Roto, just give me the power beast. I don't really care so much about the speed. Sure. I think when people say that they're worried about Tatis and they're, you know, he had the shoulder surgery, he had the wrist surgery, he was suspended, all that stuff, that like, by saying it's a risk to take Tatis early, I think you're taking just as much of a risk thinking that he might not be as good as he was before, because if he's the same guy as he was in 2021, he's the best player in fantasy baseball. He just is. The last time we saw this guy, forget about the Statcast sliders, which are like not only in the, like the 90th percentile for everything, he's like at the top. He's in the 98th, 99th, or 100th percentile in just about every hitting category you'd want to look for, obviously besides strikeout rate and chase rate. In 546 plate appearances, it feels like an eternity ago. This was just 2021. 99 runs, 42 homers, 97 RBI, 25 stolen bases, and a 282 average, which is very, very good. Like, That's craziness. Yeah. He's 24 years old. He might, out of all those players, and Acuña's in a very good lineup, Tatis might now be in the best lineup of all of them. Now, obviously, you're losing a month of this season, but I don't know. I think it's just as much of a gamble to think he won't be that guy as it is to think he will be that guy.
See, I just think early in a draft, I'm a big believer that you can't win your draft in the first 2-3 rounds, but you can lose it. And I do agree there is a price at which, I mean, Tatis right now, over this last 2 weeks, his ADP is 17.3. So he's going, 15 teamers early second round, in 12 teamers sort of mid second round. And part of that is factoring in, the month missed, right? You guarantee a month off the season, that's going to lower his value. But to me, that's still at a point where if the risk of him not being right is greater than the upside of him being, because anybody you take at that point could have a huge season. Tatis, maybe
just think his is, it,
but
a huge season for Tatis, I think, is different than a huge season for, if we look at who's going around that range.
Trout's the next outfielder being taken.
Sure, but he might be a little bit of an exception. But like Austin Riley, do we expect him to be that much better? Like, what would a huge Devers season in the Red Sox current state of lineup look like? I think when we say a huge ceiling season for Fernando Tatis Jr., he is on a different planet than every available player other than like Acuña and J-Rod.
He could be. Right. And I think that's where, for me, the risk there is it's just too much. Like, guys coming off of wrist injuries struggle, and guys coming off of shoulder injuries struggle, and guys coming back from suspensions often struggle. And now we've got a guy coming back from all three at the same time. Like, he had a significant wrist injury, a significant shoulder injury, and missed, half a season from a suspension. Like,
let's not forget, his shoulder popped out of place, and he didn't even go on the injured list. Like, 3 days later, he was like better than he was before. He's a little superhuman, and I get it. Yeah. I don't disagree. Wrist injuries, all that stuff, it hurts guys. But how many, 24-year-old, arguably best player in baseball, has that happened to? So I think he's his own case. You're right. It's a huge, huge gamble. But man, the upside is without question the number one player in fantasy baseball, which Judge just was, to be fair. But when you factor in the age, I think it's a narrow victory for Tatis for me.
Man, yeah, I am obviously I'm just not going to have Tatis anywhere this year. Like, that's just clearly not going to be in the cards for me, because I'm not willing to pay that premium price. So anyways, after Judge Tucker Tatis, or Tatis Judge Tucker, we've got Yordan Alvarez. I have Yordan Alvarez, then Soto. You have Soto, then Yordan Alvarez. And then we both have Betts and Trout. And right before we recorded, you were looking at Betts, and you were like, oh, I should have Betts higher than this. I don't know why I've got him all the way down at 8. And then you decided you couldn't move him up. So talk to me a little bit, both why you thought this is too low for him, and then why you ended up deciding, nah, it's not.
I'll answer that first, because I remembered we are, this is a keeper league podcast. This is a keeper league. It's just, I'm in full blown draft mode right now. I have Mookie pretty high on my board, and looking at this, I was like, man, how could I be quote unquote low on Mookie Betts? I mean, you can't be low on Mookie when you look at the seven names in front of him, but that's why I had him a little bit lower. I think if it was head to head, even in Roto, I think I'd want to switch Yordan with Soto to be like you. And it's funny because you said you wanted to switch Soto and Yordan to be like me. So maybe we're a little bit of opposites here. This is a tough range to rank. I think we just saw basically the 40th percentile or 30th percentile outcome for Juan Soto. Obviously, he's a much better player. But when we're also coming off a season in which Yordan Alvarez became a first round pick, essentially, where he was absolutely unbelievable, burst on the scene as the Aaron Judge of the Houston Astros, it was really hard to put Soto in front of him. So that's a very close group of three. Obviously, if you favor the speed, you go for Betts. If you're you know, worried about age, you go for Soto or Alvarez. Again, you just can't go wrong here with these first nine names.
Yeah, I tend to agree that you can't really go wrong here. I think it's more clear to me that Betts is in the right spot and belongs below those two. Like, I don't think, like, yeah, there is the speed, but, like, you know, Betts used to be a guy who stole 25 to 30 bases. His last, now, one of these years was the 2020 shortened season, but still his last 3 years, 10, 10, and 12. He's had this hip issue. I don't think he's stealing a bunch of bases. And he may be the counterpoint to all the, like, oh, there's new rules and everyone's going to run more and blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, except for players going into their age 30 seasons with bad hips, they're not going to run more. So I don't know. I think, like, any reasonable projection for him is 10 to 15 stolen bases. And I kind of think that might be high. Like, if we're getting into bold prediction season, which we're going to get into soon, bold predicting Mookie Betts to steal five bases seems like it's a possibility. Like, that feels not out of the question if he's not sort of fully healthy, especially given we know that, like, you know, the Dodgers are a pretty analytical team, and, like, they don't need him to run. That's not where they're going to get value from him, and they know it, and he knows it. So I don't know. I think there isn't enough upside in his stolen bases for me, and there's enough risk in it. It's just not enough there for me to be like, yeah, we should definitely move him up. You add in the fact that, like, and I'm getting nitpicky here because I'm not worried about his hip necessarily, but
could be
he's had injury issues, right? And, like, you don't know when that's going to creep, you know, become a real issue. And it's to some level, when you're trying to, like, pick nits between Yordan Alvarez and Soto, part of the reason I've been thinking about maybe I should have flipped them and put Soto ahead of Yordan is we know Alvarez has the knee issues and they seem fine. I am not drafting him thinking, like, oh, better discount him because his knees have been bad. But, like, if you're asking me for the next 5 years, 3 to 5 years, who do I like better, Juan Soto or Yordan Alvarez? I got to find some way to differentiate between them. And it might just be that slightly elevated injury risk is enough to move Yordan down and Soto up. I don't know. But I have no issue with either of those two in either order. I do think Betts belongs behind them. And I think the Trout is the obvious next choice after that. And then we already talked about this sort of Harris versus Robert versus, you know, should Randy or Rosarena be in the mix? And I'm okay with all of this. Any other thoughts on the top 10 before we jump to our other topics?
Yeah, I think it's just more of my last thought here is appreciation for Yordan Alvarez. The reason why I wanted to put him over Juan Soto for what you had is because, like, as much as I love Juan Soto, if we're talking just a category league, what advantage does Soto have over Yordan? Like, what category is Soto going to outperform him in? I don't know what it is. Is it stolen bases by four? You know, like, Juan Soto could hit for a good batting average. He did not last year. Yordan will hit for a good batting average. Yordan could conceivably hit 20 more home runs than Juan Soto. Soto could repeat last year, hit 27, and it wouldn't shock anybody if Yordan hits 47. The lineup around Yordan is just as good as the lineup around Soto. So I think that's the issue I'm having is I was, like, lost in the name, like, oh, keeper league, Juan Soto, that sounds amazing. But I don't know in a category league where the advantages of drafting Soto over Yordan, other than just the knees. Like you said, Soto's been reliable, yeah, and Yordan's had issues in the hand issue last year. That was tough on Yordan.
I think if you look over the last two seasons combined, right, because you've got Alvarez sort of breaking out in 2022, Soto having the down year in 2022. So, like, let's average it out a little bit. Over the last two seasons combined, Alvarez has 70 home runs to Soto's 56. Soto has 15 stolen bases to Alvarez's 2. So 14 extra home runs versus 13 extra stolen bases over the two seasons is probably a slight advantage to the stolen bases in terms of value. But given I don't think Soto's going to run a ton, yeah, I'm not sure how much that really matters. Soto scored 204 runs to 187 for Alvarez. I think he'll maintain that type of advantage because he's just such a ridiculous on-base percentage beast. Not that Alvarez doesn't get on base, but Soto is just in another world. Alvarez, 201 RBIs to Soto's 157. So that's a pretty sizable gap, but it's going to shrink quite a bit because Soto is not with the Nationals anymore. And that's going to make a huge difference, right? He is in a much, much better lineup. Like, if you think that Tatis is putting up 90 runs again, or a 90 run pace, let's say 95 run pace over whatever, like, someone's driving him in. it's right. Like, so I, there's gonna be a lot of RBI opportunities for Soto, and then batting average 277 for Soto, 291 for Alvarez. It's pretty even, but yeah, you're right. I mean, I think it does come down to a question of, like, do I think Soto's gonna steal six more bases like he has on average? And if he does, it's even-ish. If he doesn't, then Alvarez is probably the better fantasy player this year.
Yeah. So just wild to think about, but I think he is. Yeah.
So let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue going through outfielders. All right, welcome back. As always, we like to look at best and worst ADP values as well as prospects to stash. We've already gone through our outfield top 10s. So let's start with our best ADP value. And this is an interesting one because he just went up for auction in this podcast league that we're playing in this afternoon. Well, this morning, I guess he went up last night. I don't know. But he just finished auctioning in that league. And he went for a pretty low price, which I think sort of fits what you're saying here.
And I assume that's Stanton because I have not seen him go up for auction. But
Miss it? Yeah. $9. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm going to have to be out. My outfield is very expensive right now. But yeah, just Giancarlo Stanton, seeing him go so late is a little surprising. I think definitely eye-opening for those of us that have been playing for a while, because he has lost absolutely nothing in terms of quality of contact. I mean, he is still 99th percentile average exit velocity, 100 percentile max exit velocity. Like, across the board, it's what you would normally expect. He had a terrible year in terms of batting average, and that's obviously going to be a risk if you roster Giancarlo Stanton, that he could bat pretty low. But the strikeout rate was up over 30%, and it hadn't been there for a couple of years, and the walk rate was still excellent. His performance against fastballs went down drastically, and that is concerning to me. He hit 309 against fastballs in 2021 and 205 against fastballs in 2022. So if that is Giancarlo Stanton slowing down, then obviously we have a major issue there. If it's not, and that number comes back up again, then the batting average is going to come up to a reasonable level, and he's a 40 homer, 100 RBI candidate that you're getting in pick 150, which is a little absurd to me. And you could say, well, you know, Hunter Renfroe is going after him. In the last 2 years, Hunter Renfroe has also been awesome. I think there's just a little bit of risk there. I don't know how sticky that is, where I think Giancarlo Stanton is going to finish his career potentially as a borderline Hall of Famer and has the track record to back it up. And Hunter Renfroe aside, you're really getting towards the end of, like, reasonable outfielders, of, like, starting quality outfielders and guys you feel comfortable with slotting in every weekend for all three games. And Stanton is marking the beginning of the end there. So Yankee lineup's great. It's a good ballpark to hit in. I'm not ready to give up on Giancarlo Stanton, but watch the ability against fastballs early in the season.
Yeah, so it's interesting you mention Renfroe. So Stanton, as you said, he's the 34th outfielder off the board in NFBC. Andrew Vaughn is the next one after him over the last 2 weeks, and then Hunter Renfroe after him. Stanton, as I mentioned in this podcaster league, went for $9 in our the slow portion of our auction, came off the board earlier today. I have Hunter Renfroe in that league. I picked him up for the same $9, and I was not willing to go to 10 on Stanton. And I think it gives you a good sense of sort of where I am with them, that I think they are relatively similar. Interestingly, the guy in between them is Andrew Vaughn, who is currently on the board, and I am leading the bidding for him at $9. So that's apparently the $9 range of 5x5 outfielders. I didn't really quite realize that, but it's sort of funny. They're all, you know, we'll see. There's still 8 hours left, so there's no guarantee that I'm going to win Vaughn for that $9. But yeah, just fascinating. They're all going for that same price. There's a really good article on Fangraphs. It was, let's see, we're recording this on the 11th, so it was 9 days ago, February 2nd. Esteban Rivera. Esteban is a contributing writer at Fangraphs, but he also writes at Pinstripe Alley. Obviously, when anytime I see that someone wrote for someone like Pinstripe Alley, I'm like, Yankees fan. Of course, he's biased. But, like, there's a nice balance here where if he's writing for Fangraphs, there's reason to believe that he knows his stuff too. So he's actually sort of a perfect person, I think, in some ways to analyze Stanton because he knows him well as a fan, but also as a good analyst who can break him down. And he talks about some of the stuff you talked about. What he comes away with is a conclusion that Stanton faded in a lot of those areas as the season went on because of injuries, right? His body is breaking down, which we know. And basically reading sort of the end of his article, he says, none of these injuries were major long-term concerns, but they were enough to compromise his swing and performance. Assuming he enters 2023 fully recovered from these issues, there's no question in my mind he has the skills to deliver a 130 to 140 WRC plus season each year. But he will need to be conscious of how any injury impacts his swing as he enters the latter half of his career. And I think it's just a great astute point. And it's well worth, go read the article because the article is fantastic. But it's a great astute point that, like, it's not just the missed time that these injuries add up to, right? They impact his ability to perform. And so it creates an interesting decision point when you're thinking about where to and when to draft Stanton, that if he's healthy, he could put up a huge year, right? I mean, like, you know, it seems crazy to think about it, but like, if I told you somebody was going to hit 60 home runs this year and it's not Aaron Judge, Stanton's as good a guess as any, right? If he stays healthy and plays enough, like, he's got the talent to do that. But it's not just that he might only get into 100 games, 120 games. It's also that 40, 50 of those games, he might not be himself. So it's a real tough risk to take. But I think you're right that where you're looking at him, you're looking at like a 11th or 12th round pick, 12th or 13th round pick, something like that. Like, you're getting, you know, the upside there. I mean, you know, the 60 home run thing, like, he's not Judge and he's not going to be Judge. That's not the right comparison. But like, Kyle Schwarber is the 14th outfielder off the board at pick 47. You're telling me that Giancarlo Stanton, if he's healthy, can't put up a Kyle Schwarber season? He certainly can. And I don't want to bet on that. I don't want to pay the same price for those guys. But I think Stanton is at a price where it's worth the risk. I think, like, the upside is huge. He's an interesting one in head-to-head leagues because if he's healthy for the playoffs, he could win you a matchup in the playoffs. But that's the part of the season I'm least confident. Like, reading that article by Esteban Rivera, part of what it struck for me is, like, if these are things that are going to linger with him as the season goes on, it means his value is going to drop as the season goes on. So it makes him a challenge in that format. But for me, when I was looking for best ADP value, I sort of surprised myself because this isn't a guy that I've been super high on, and his ADP is kind of early for me to be claiming he's the best value. But Cedric Mullins, over the last 2 weeks, his ADP is around 52. So he's a, you know, fifth-ish, mid-fifth round pick. And the reason I picked him is he's going, like I said, 52. On the player rater, the Razzball player rater last year, his season was the 27th best fantasy season. Now, there's lots of reason to discount that because the stolen bases, we talk about this all the time with the player raters, they overrate stolen bases. So instead of 27, maybe he should be 37, something like that. But that still is like a round and a half discount on what I think we have to consider a floor season for Cedric Mullins, right? I mean, you look at what he did in 2021, 30 home runs, 30 stolen bases, .291 average. Then in 2022, He posts basically the same strikeout rate. He walks a little less, which makes sense given the less power, but he hit 16 home runs instead of 30. He still stole 34 bases, and his batting average dropped all the way to .258. And I don't know. I mean, I look at that and it's like, I don't see a lot of reason to think that he's going to get worse. Now, is he going to repeat what he did in 2021? I don't think so. I wasn't buying him repeating that last year. I'm certainly not buying him repeating it after the down year in between. But he doesn't have to. Like, if he puts up that same down year, you're going to be thrilled with him at a fifth round pick. And if he adds 4 or 5 more home runs, and if the batting average creeps back up to 265, 270, I mean, like that 258, not only was he 291 in 2021, he was 271 in 2020. Like, I find it hard to believe he's going to hit. I think he's going to hit more home runs. I think he's going to hit for a higher average, and that offense is going to be better. So I think his runs and RBIs will go up. So you add all that up, and I don't know. It feels like his floor should be 15 picks earlier than where he's going. So if I can get him at what I think is a price lower than his floor and know that that 2021 ceiling exists, that's great value.
Yeah, he's definitely an interesting case because, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about Randy Arozarena, and I think it's just like Randy Arozarena's numbers under the hood don't look that great, but he put up numbers. Cedric Mullins' numbers didn't look that great under the hood, but he didn't put up numbers. I mean, I say he didn't put up numbers. He still had a great season, 16 homers, 34 steals, but I do kind of view those guys similarly. So the fact that there is that gap is a little bit odd. Obviously, the Orioles lineup is getting better. Obviously, the switch in the ballpark there, the adjustments they made in left field don't really affect Cedric Mullins that much. He is an interesting case where, like, the barrel rate plummeted. I mean, that 8.1, if you're getting an 8.1% barrel rate from Cedric Mullins, if you're getting that from most players, it's not that great. But if you're getting that from someone of Cedric Mullins' profile who pulls the ball and is very fast, will get you stolen bases, you're taking that. It's just weird because his average exit velocity didn't even go down a full mile an hour. He's still pulling the ball. He wasn't hitting the ball on the ground that much more. It was just this odd 4% increase in his pop-up rate. And, like, That has been an issue for him a few times in his career. So I'm not entirely sure what that's all about. I'm willing to write it off as a little bit fluky because even with that taking place, he still put forward a pretty awesome season, like you said. So I like Mullins there. It's definitely early for a best value pick, but I think that's kind of a testament to how thin outfield can get. And so you want to get your studs early, and I still consider him a stud.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that's sort of beautiful about it is if he ends up being a round and a half, like, again, if his floor is a round and a half more valuable than where he's being drafted, you're taking him as the 15th outfielder off the board, and you're getting maybe a top 10 outfielder, but probably a top 12 outfielder. Like, that's a pretty nice little boost, right? He can be in like a, you know, whether it's a 3 outfielder, 4 out, 5 outfielder league. If he can be your outfielder number one and provide top 12 value without having to use a top 12 value pick, that means that you're that much better at some other position. And you can still come back with a really good second outfielder and be I don't know. I really like that value. So I agree. I never would have imagined myself saying, like, oh, this guy's going in the top, almost the top 50. He's the best value, but I kind of think he is. So let's flip it, though. Let's look the other direction. Worst ADP. I'm going to go with mine first because I think yours is going to be more controversial. I know it is because I'm going to argue with you. But now, interestingly, when we made this list, because we made this list a couple weeks ago when we were getting ready for our last episode, the guy I picked was going 98th. He is now going 91st. So his ADP has gone down, gone better, gone closer to the beginning of the draft by half a round. That's Byron Buxton. And I don't see it. I don't get it. The opposite of what we were talking about with Mullins just now, the floor on Buxton is so low. It's so low. Like, and it's not just, by the way, the floor of what if he, you know, only plays 80 games, which is, I mean, 80 games would be kind of a lot for him. So, like, forget even leaving aside the, like, how many games is he going to play thing. He had a 224 average last year. He stole a total of 6 bases, and he is running less and less. Like, he also, like, a lot of the projections have him 10, 11 stolen bases, but sort of like I was saying with Mookie Betts before, you know, you want to make a bold prediction that Byron Buxton doesn't try to steal a base this year? That's not a crazy bold prediction. He shouldn't. He should not try to steal bases under any circumstances. He is not helpful in batting average. I guess I should be careful when I say there. In 2021, he had a 306 average with a 344 BABIP. He has not consistently put up BABIPs like that. And I think the 224 average this year is, I don't know, maybe goes 240, something like that. 245 is where I think he might be. But there's a floor to be much lower than that. His strikeout rate jumped to 30%. That was in part because he got a lot more patient, which he needed to do because he needed to walk more. But it's not going to help if he's striking out a ton. You're basically what you are with Buxton is you're entirely reliant on him hitting for power and staying on the field, which means that you can wait the 50 picks, maybe even more that Pete just recommended a minute ago and take Giancarlo Stanton. And he also is reliant on power and needs to stay on the field. And while Stanton hasn't been, you know, healthy over his career, he looks like a, you know, he looks like the like a statue or a statue's bad example.
Kissed by God. Yes.
Right. Next. Compared to Buxton. Right. So I just don't see it. There's no chance I'm spending a top 100 pick on Byron Buxton. I don't think I'm spending a top 150 pick on him. And as of right now, over the last 2 weeks, his range, he's gone as high as 61 and as low as 113. So I can confidently say I am not drafting Byron Buxton anywhere because there's just no way at 113 I'm still interested in him. That's just too much for a guy who, like, I think people think he's like an MVP candidate if he can just stay healthy, and I don't think that's true anymore.
Oh, it doesn't even matter if it's true. Like, I hate to say it.
Fair enough.
But like, he can't stay healthy. We look at last year and think like, oh man, poor Byron Buxton. He was injured again. That's the second most games he's played in a season in his career. He's played over 92 games once in 8 seasons. He's stolen more than 14 bases once in 8 seasons. It was the same year, 2017. He's not a stolen base threat. He's not a he's not going to stay healthy. I hate to say that. It's such a terrible thing to predict. But like, I'm sorry, can we be adults? Look at his track record over 8 seasons. It's not going to happen. He's not cut out for it.
Yeah, I mean, his games played over the years. So, you know, he came up in 2015, he played 46 games. It was debut, fine. Lots of guys have short debuts. He doubled that in 2016, played 92, and then he got all the way up to 140 games in 2017. Since then, 28, 87, 39. Now, 39 was in the shortened season, but even if you extrapolate that out to like the 90-ish, it would have been. That's still not good. 61 in 2021, and then you said 92, tied for the second most in his career. The 382 plate appearances was the second most of his career. Like, that's the thing, is what you're looking at last year, and this was such a good point you made, is when people are like, oh, another injured year for Buxton. Man, I just, like, that wasn't an injured year for Buxton. That was a healthy year for Buxton.
Yeah,
that's as good as it gets.
It's feeling great. Yeah.
Now, we'll see. Maybe they let him DH more this year, and so things, I don't know. We'll see. But I'm out.
I will see from afar.
Yeah. I hope he's a fun player, so I hope he stays healthy, but yeah. Let's turn our attention to prospects. Oh no, we can't do that. We have to talk about your worst ADP value. The guy I put him in my top 10, and you're like, no, he's not only not in the top 10, he's the worst ADP value out there.
Well, to be fair, I think you can be top 10 and still, based on the position and everything else, still not be a great value. I would probably have Harris 11th because I think I like him more than a Rosarena. And I don't know, I'm very high in Kyle Schwarber, but look, he was awesome. Okay. Like, incredible debut, 21 years old, all that stuff. It was 441 plate appearances. It was a ground ball rate of 56%, which I mentioned earlier. It was a walk rate under 5%. This kid is going to face an adjustment period. It's just going to happen. Ozzie Albies is going to be back. Everybody's worried about Ozzie Albies' position in the lineup. What if Michael Harris struggles? What if he continues to have a bad strikeout rate and a non-existent walk rate? And the team says, all right, well, we're going to put Ozzie Albies back up and we're going to start batting Michael Harris 8th. We're going to take this guy ahead of players like Mike Trout. I'm not saying you are, because your rankings would suggest otherwise, but Michael Harris has a high of 13. A minimum of 13 on the NFBC. That's a little crazy to me. And you made the point earlier that if you want him, you have to take him there, right? You have to take him at the turn because you're not going to be able to get him late in the third round. But why? Why can't you get him late in the third round? I feel like we're jumping the gun on him, and it that could be a catastrophic mistake.
Yeah, and that is a good example, I think, of where you can lose a draft in the first round, but you can't, or second round, I guess, in this case, but you can't win it. I think part of what's interesting with Harris is if you look at the ADPs over the last 2 weeks for outfielders, you've got four of them going in the top seven: Acuna, Judge, J-Rod, Tucker. Then you have three more going between 9th and 11th: Alvarez, Soto, and Betts. Then you have Tatis Jr. and Trout at 17 and 19. And then Harris is at 25. It's a little bit of a half round drop from Trout. And then Arozarena is at 36. So there's a full round drop between the 10th outfielder off the board right now, Harris, and the 11th, Arozarena. Then you got Varsho, who is, as I said, a different story. And then another almost full round down to Luis Robert at 45. And so I do think, I know I said I was going to fight you on this, but I do think you are right to say you could believe that Harris belongs in that top 10 for a keeper league and still think that his ADP could go down by a round. Like, his ADP could drop by 10 spots and he'd all of a sudden be a late third round pick instead of an early third, late second round pick. And that's a big difference at that point in the draft. And it does make it a little easier to look at that and be like, man, do I really want to take Harris at 25 when I could take a Arozarena at 36 or Robert at 45 or Schwarber at 47? And I think if it were, do I want to take Harris at 35 or Arozarena at 35? Well, that's an interesting question, and I might prefer to take Harris, or I would. That's why I put him higher, right? For keeper leagues anyways, I would take him over Arozarena. But that you're not being given that choice. And so I think it's fair to call out his ADP value being off.
And I do you think there's a little bit of recency bias in play here where Michael Harris Jr. is going that high and Luis Robert is going like what, 20 picks later? Like somebody needs to sit me down and break down for me, like, what exactly is the difference other than 4 years of age? Because they both have strikeout issues. They both don't really take a lot of walks. Luis Robert, though, is about 20% K rate over the last two seasons compared to Harris's 24.3 last season. Like, Luis Robert doesn't have the splits issue that Harris does. Harris had an OPS of 649 against left-handed pitchers. That's not really a problem for Luis Robert.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like a recency bias, like Robert hasn't stayed on the field, so now we prefer this new flashy toy. I don't see a big difference between these two players.
I think Robert he hasn't stayed on the field, right? And it's not just a recency bias thing. Like, he hasn't stayed on the field. That's a thing that matters. He had a wrist issue last year, and that always concerns me with hitters. That's another little sort of knock against him. I also think I would project them for relatively similar power. I think Robert ends up with 2 to 3 more home runs, something like that, maybe 4 or 5 more home runs. But I would bet on a 5 to 7 stolen base gap, if not more, in Harris's favor. So I think that's the other piece of this. I think that's probably most of it. I do think there is some recency bias there. I do think that, like, people are looking at, you know, last year, Harris had a 297 average on top of that. I think they likely on average both end up in sort of the 275, 280 range, not one of them at almost 300 and the other at 284, which is where they were last year. So I'm okay with Harris above Robert. I think that there are good reasons for that, but I do think they are significantly closer than their ADP as of the last couple of weeks would suggest. For sure.
Like an ADP of 20, a difference, like if that was in the 300s, it's not that big of a difference. But we're talking this early, like that's huge.
Yes. So let's talk prospects. You've got this guy, I know he's a favorite of yours. So why don't you talk about the prospect you recommended?
Sure. I mean, so it's Sedan Rafaela of the Red Sox. He catapulted up boards across many different, I don't know, outlets, I guess would be the term. Like, he's now on Baseball America. He's finally on their top 100, and he's not just on it. He's like 86th or something, which is just a massive jump for him. I'm kind of like you when it comes to prospects and keeper leagues and stuff like that. I just want somebody that's going to perform. And the Red Sox signed Adam Duvall to play center field. Adam Duvall is a good fielder. I don't know how good he is going to be as a center fielder. I think there's a chance that Adam Duvall's washed. I do. He took more than one step back last year. He's 34 years old.
Yeah,
he
was totally fair.
Limited player to begin with, right? Rafaela, though, is not only obviously he might start the season at AAA. That was a report I read a couple of weeks ago, but he's a tremendous fielder and he's playing center field. So it feels like at some point there's going to be a promotion for him this season, assuming he continues to progress. Every time he moved up a step, he took a little bit of a step back, struggled a little bit at AA at first, but the numbers still looked awesome. So if he can get his act together and perform well at AAA, I think he'll be there. And if he does reach the major leagues, he does profile as a very athletic, very quick, can hit for some power center fielder who could, if the Red Sox have a little bit of a tough season, bat towards the top of the lineup. So a lot needs to go right. But I'm looking for players who have a chance to make the jump this season. And Rafael, I think, is someone who kind of fits the mold of like, all right, well, the Red Sox could have a need. He's looking pretty good, and he does have some fantasy appeal, and he's free in draft. I mean, he's literally free.
Yeah. So Rafael is an interesting one because everything you said about why he could be valuable as soon as this year and certainly by next year is right. But if I'm remembering correctly, he does not need to be added to the 40 man anytime soon. Like maybe not till after next season.
That might, that sounds right. Yeah.
And that is, I'm going to be careful how I say this because I don't want to say anything. It is late on a Saturday night. You've kindly agreed to stay up late recording this. I don't want to be mean. There is not a ton of reason for the Red Sox to rush a guy onto the 40-man roster to help them this year.
Why? They're going to win 105 games. Don't they want to do well in the playoffs?
That was what I was getting at, was they're going to win so many games that what difference does he make?
Hey, man, people are sleeping on the Sox. Like, look, the rotation does not look pretty, but there is a universe. There is a within their potential range of outcomes. I love that phrase in fantasy. The Red Sox do have a decently high-end potential range of outcomes on the positive end. There's a lot of veterans, and we don't need to go down that road, but they haven't been too shy to promote guys in the past, right?
No, I agree, and I don't think it's that. I just don't know if I were them. I don't know why I would rush him, given the lack of immediate value. And so I think that his fastest path is that they decide at some point late this year that he is going to be a starter on the team next year, and so they want to get him some playing time this year to see how he does, and they decide it's worth adding him to the 40 man for that. If they aren't at that state, then adding him to the 40 man this year is like you're going to expose somebody to the Rule 5 draft, or you're going to DFA somebody that you might want to keep in order to pull this guy onto the 40 man in order to give him a debut. And I just don't think they're going to do that. And so that's my biggest concern, but I like everything about him. And honestly, the guy I picked as my stash is also, it's also a future play because I don't think this guy's coming up this year either. So I'm not, you know, for very different reasons. So the guy I picked is Jackson Churio. If you're a prospect fan, you've heard of this guy. He is, you know, one of the top prospects in the game. The guy, like, he sort of can do it all. He's got a good hit tool. He's got good power. He's got good speed. He should be a decent fielder. He finished last year in AA for the Brewers. It was only 26 plate appearances, so I would presume he'll be back there this year. I think he probably spends most of the year in AA. Hopefully earns his way to AAA this year and is in a position to be valuable in fantasy leagues next year. A cup of coffee this year is possible, especially if the Brewers find themselves in the mix. I'm not super confident they're going to maybe they'll be in the mix. We'll see. They've got very good pitching. They should be able to, especially with the added wild cards and stuff, like they should be able to contend. And if they can, like they have some questions in their lineup, right? I mean, Yelich is going to be in the lineup for sure in the outfield, but like Garrett Mitchell is not proven, and he is probably their starting center fielder right now. Tyrone Taylor looks like they're starting left or right fielder, but like he's fine, but there's no reason, you know, you could upgrade him. Jesse Winker at DH was not good last year. And so there is space for Churio to make an impact this year. I don't think it's likely. Again, I think he likely starts in Double A. I think he needs some time there. He's only 18 years old. Like he's almost 19, but still very young. There are some guys like Joey Weimar, Sal Frelick, who need a look ahead of him. And so he's sort of down the pecking order. So this is a guy that really, I think he makes more sense in leagues where you can draft him and stash him. If you can draft him and stash him, you should. If you're in a league where value this year really matters, then like we've talked about in my CBS, one of my home leagues, I've got this like minor league draft thing where if your guys aren't really ready to go by the start of next season, it's a mistake to draft them. Churio will not be very high up my board in that one. In our Listener League 2 has a minor league portion of the draft. I like Churio a lot for that one because that one, there's room for you to hold him and stash him for another year. And so we're getting ready to start that draft soon. Now I've just sort of publicly announced that I'm interested in Jackson Churio, but yeah, whatever. So be it.
I think a lot of people will be.
Yeah. So let's take another quick break and we come back. Got some drafts that have been going on and stuff like that. It's probably worth talking a little bit about any interesting stuff going on. So we'll be right back. All right. Welcome back. And Sid, we're going to talk about some of the drafts we got going on. And Pete, I got a bone to pick with you. We are literally in the middle of recording. We are sitting here. We are at our computers. We are talking to each other.
Oh, I know what this is going.
While we are talking, while you are talking here, while you are acting like you're my friend, like you're someone who is kind to me, you outbid me for Pete Fairbanks in a draft while we were recording.
That is correct.
I'm hurt.
You were nice enough to outbid me for Freddie Peralta a solid 15 minutes before we were set to record. So for what it's worth, I don't actually expect to get Pete Fairbanks for this price. Obviously, none of this matters because by the time this airs, he'll be long gone. If I can get it for $7, though, it's one of the steals of the draft. So yes, I do apologize, but I don't think I'm going to end up with him anyway, disappointingly.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out. So this is in our podcaster league draft. This draft, I've mentioned it a couple times on the show already. I'm very excited about this. So the history of this league, this league is literally starting right now. The backstory on this league, we'll say, is DVR, Derek Van Riper from The Athletic, we mentioned earlier. He records rates and barrels with Eno Saris. Eno has been an auto new player for a long time. Eno is responsible for introducing Niv Shah, who runs Auto New, to David Appleman, who runs Fangraphs. And like that partnership exists because of Eno. So Eno has been a fan of Auto New for years. He talks about it on the pod occasionally. And DVR has been saying like, oh, I should really check that out sometime. And so finally he was like, all right, I'm going to do this. I'm going to start a league. Niv reached out to him. Niv and I had a conversation with him and he was like, yeah, I want to do this, but like I need help sort of getting everything set up and running. And he wanted to set up a podcaster league. So I helped him sort of put together a, you know, list of people we wanted to invite, get the league started. And this league, so Pete and I are in it. We each have our own team. Sarah Sanchez from Bleed Cubby Blue, who's just a super person. And she's a big Tanner Houck fan. So Pete is, I think she's the best. She's in this. DVR's got a team. Eno does not have a team. Eno's going to help DVR out a little bit, it sounds like. Chris Blessing from Baseball Head HQ is in here. Tim Kanick from Fantasy Aceball, who's a one of the few experienced auto new players in this league. He plays in quite a few leagues. So I don't know if he's in a 5x5 auto new. This is a 5x5. It's a little different. Schwebzy and Jordan from In the Deep, another one of our pitcherless podcast network pods. As well as Daniel Port, who hosts Longball Legacies on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. He's got a team. Chris Welsh, also known as Is It the Welsh, has a team. Carlos Marcano from the Baseball Beat Podcast is in here. Chris, actually, I feel like I should know Chris's name, but Chris, who runs the At Baseball Pods Twitter feed that basically like tweets out everything you could possibly want to know about baseball podcasts and runs that bracket every year. He's in here. And then Paul Sporer and Justin Mason have a sleeper in the bus team in this as well. So like, this is a pretty stacked league in terms of just really impressive podcasts and podcasters. And so I'm super excited. We had a live 3-hour live, you know, over the computer, but a live 3-hour auction to start this thing off a few days ago. And it was really fun. I had a really good time with that one. And now we're in this slow draft. And so it's been fascinating. And one of the things I'm really struggling with in this one, and this brings me back to Fairbanks, is I don't play a lot of 5x5 hot or new. And so closers, like, I don't have a really good sense of what closers are worth. So like in this draft so far, I have an $11 Kenley Jansen and I have a $10 Paul Sewald. I, in terms of context, because that may mean little to nothing to everybody listening right now, let me give you some context. I'm going to pull up a list of other relievers who have been drafted slowly but surely. Edwin Diaz went for $27, Emmanuel Clase, $24, Josh Hader, $21, Jordan Romano, $21, Devin Williams, $19, Ryan Helsley, $19, Raisel Iglesias, $18, Felix Bautista, 18. Ryan Pressly, 16. Andres Munoz went for 16. I'm very fascinated that I got Sewald for 10 and Munoz went for 16. Once I got Sewald for 10, I was like, oh, I'm going to go like 13, 14 for Munoz. Like, I'll overpay for him. It'll be fine. Nope, didn't get him. Camilo Duvall went for 13. Jansen, 11. I mentioned Sewald at 10. Yoan Duran at 9. And that's basically it so far. Then you get like James Karinchak at 6. Craig Kimbrell at 2. So I'm very happy with Jansen at 11. Like, I look at Jansen at 11 versus like Ryan Pressly at 16, Felix Bautista at 18, Raisel Iglesias at 18. Like, I get that he's not as good as them anymore, but he's good enough to hold that job. Like, I feel like everybody was like, oh, Kenley Jansen was bad and blah, 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 blah. Like, dude had 41 saves last year. He had a 3.38 ERA. Like, that's not great, but it'll do for a closer. That's fine. So I'm feeling pretty good about him. He struck out 85 hitters in 64 innings. Like, I'm really happy with that. And then, like I said, getting Sewald, who, you know, he's not going to rack up 40 saves, but I bet he had 20 last year. I don't see any reason to think he won't have 20-25 again. He'll put up better rates than Jansen did. I'm pretty happy with that. But now I'm just not sure. Like, what are you doing with closers? Do you have a plan for, I mean, you've got Jordan Romano, you've got Duvall, you've spent $34 between those two. Do you feel like you need another closer?
So need? No, I'm pretty confident I could work the free agency and try and get them as the year goes on. I think when you were reading off those prices, I was like, yeah, I think I overpaid the most. I think a lot there might end up being quite a few overpays, but Jordan Romano for $21 is the most, but it was worth it for my planning purposes. You know, big picture, this was off the heels of our staff league draft, and I was really disappointed because I couldn't bring myself to pay the prices for some of those players went for due to inflation. And I left the draft like $50. Now I feel like my roster probably has like $450 worth of players. I think it's a pretty good roster, but I was disappointed with that. So I went into this one being like, I'm going to spend, I'm going to get the players that I want. I'm going to lock them down. By the time we shifted from the live to the slow auction, I had spent more money than anybody else. And part of that was making sure I got two closers that I felt like had decent job security. I mean, the job security for Duvall, I guess, is a little bit debatable, but I think he's going to start the year as the closer and run with it. So did I overpay for Romano? At least I don't think Duvall's much of an overpay. Yes, but I'm comfortable with that. This is Otnu leagues are deep, man. Even though they're only 12 teams, they are deep. And if you don't get saves, it's going to be tough to dig yourself out in a roto format.
Yeah. And that's where with Jansen and Sewald, I feel like I really could use another closer. And Fairbanks, I thought, was actually sort of a decent bet to go at a reasonable price because he'll have to share the job. And so in my head, I was sort of like, look, for the $21 that you paid Romano, if I can pay Fairbanks and Sewald around that combined, I will get twice as many innings of similar production and a similar number of saves. Is sort of how I thought about it. So that's sort of the but you outbid me, and now I got to figure out how much I want to bid on him. So,
well, I like the mindset, and I think it's a good one to have. I think you might be underestimating Fairbanks a little bit. It's a joke to think that the Rays are going to give somebody the job, but first of all, he is just filthy, and second of all, they just bought out his arbitration years, so they don't. It doesn't matter to them if he has a 30 save season. It's not going to hurt the Rays financially, which is all they ever care about anyway. So, like, he could end up with 30 saves. It would be less surprising now than it would have been before they bought out his arbitration years.
Makes sense. Yeah, and by the way, I didn't mention him, but because he just went off the board earlier today, but Daniel Bard went for $10. Clay Holmes went for $15. David Bednar went for $16. So that's sort of that is the range that guys are going for. And there are, you know, I've read off a lot of closers now. It's like, I was trying to also look at, like, okay, if I don't get Fairbanks, who's left? Like, Alexis Diaz is out there. Scott Barlow, Alex Lang, if we're confident he's the closer in Detroit.
Maybe.
Gallegos is up for auction right now, but I think that's mostly Helsley's job. I believe, is Evan Phillips being, is he up right now?
Or did they just sign Alex Reyes?
They did just sign Alex Reyes, but do you think they signed, Evan Phillips went for $7. Daniel Hudson is still out there. I have no idea who's going to close for that team. Jorge Lopez is still out there. Dylan Floro is still out there. Kyle Finnegan.
Love me some Dylan Floro. Love me some Dylan Floro. Although AJ Puck going to Miami. Now that's interesting. Puck's there. Barnes is there. I hope my man Floro is safe.
I don't know. We are well past the point where I'm going to buy a closer and be like, yeah, I feel good about that.
Oh, that's for sure. That's for sure. Unless it's Petey Fairbanks, I'd get the bid in there.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to have to. The other draft you mentioned, the Fangraphs staff league that you are participating in, despite not being on the Fangraphs staff.
Correct, to be clear.
you and I both, I mean, I didn't even realize how much money you left with. And I'm looking now, you have $40 left on the table.
Okay, I
thought you have the third. You have the third most money available. The Joe Musgrove On team. I like that team name. That's one of my favorite team names. But the Joe Musgrove On, which is Jake Mailot, who is one of the other Auto New writers for Fangraphs, he has $44. So he's got $4 more than you. And then there's Niv and I. And Niv and I left $87 on the table. You felt like it went bad. You should go. I wrote this up over at Fangraphs earlier in the week because Niv and I messed this up before the draft even started. Because basically what happened was we looked at our team and we were like, all right, we've got these like three holes we need to deal with. We'll be able to figure this out. And then we went to the draft and we were like, looked at who was available. And we were like, okay, we basically have to get Paul Goldschmidt, Xander Bogaerts, and Francisco Lindor, or we're done. We can't, like, and we're like, that's never going to happen. Those, like, the inflation prices on those guys will be way too high. And so we backed off and made this whole other plan. And then those three guys went for $78 total. Oof. And we have, like I said, we have $87 left over. So if we had just, like, We could have bid all those guys up. We could have won all those guys, you know, and who knows how it works out. Like maybe if we get involved in the Goldschmidt bidding, instead of stopping at 33, he stops at 43. And then I was right. But like, regardless, we messed it up. We actually sort of executed the plan we went in with really well, but it was what I wrote in the article is effectively, you need to make sure that part of your plan is like, okay, I don't think I can get these guys, but what if I can? Like, what happens if these guys start going for less than I think? How do I pivot and adjust to that? And we just didn't. And it was, So now we have $87 to mess around with. We're trying to figure out what to do. You actually reached out to us about trade talks, right? You wanted to get our Schwarber and Wheeler or something, right?
Yeah. So I'm sitting on like some prospects that like kind of fit the Chad bill, like guys who highly touted, but are in the major leagues. You know, it made me feel better when you said that it was Bogaerts, Lindor, and Goldschmidt because I have a million first basemen and a million shortstops. So it's like, unless those dudes were very, very cheap, I wasn't going to go for them. I was targeting pitchers. Right. I got into a little bit of a bidding war with Eno for Julio Urias. And I was like, am I really about to pay $40 for Julio Urias? No way. something else will be up. But I it was just by then all four major starting pitchers were off the market and I just didn't feel confident about anybody else. But again, I look at my roster and I love it. So I want to compete this year. I think this team could compete as is, being $40 under the $400 budget, but or cap, I should say. But I think I could strengthen it. So I'm all ears on a Wheeler or Schwarber potential deal there.
Yeah, we're gonna have to get back to you. Niv and I have been having a hard time deciding what route we want to go with our roster. We've been sort of hoping that other people would update their trade blocks. And then we'd get a sense of like, is anybody else selling? Is anybody else buying? And like, because there are cases where there are aspects of our team from which we have enough upside depth that I'd be willing to opportunistically buy, but it needs to be the right opportunity. And we haven't really seen it yet. And so then we're getting into this like, okay, do we think our pitching is good enough that we can make a trade with Pete where he gets Wheeler? And we actually get like two or three pieces that are future value, but could help us today. And you, like I said, you've got those guys. So we're kicking the tires on a bunch of stuff and trying to figure out what we want to do. But yeah,
it's just so much regret. Cause like now it's like, whether it's Wheeler or somebody else, like I was kicking the tires on Corbin Burns. I don't think that's going to happen. It's like, I could have just had, if I just paid up for Bieber or Urias or Scherzer or DeGrom, I could have just had them and kept all of my other assets. Instead, I'm sitting here with a ridiculous amount of money. And yeah, it's a bummer. All those April breakouts, if I don't make a trade, man, I'm going to roster all of them between the two of us. Anybody
you
that
think
breaks
that?
Out. Yeah. Between the two of us, anybody that breaks out in April, they're going to be on either your roster or my roster.
So one last thing that we should talk about, we are our two listener leagues. We have our Otter New Listener League and we have our two Fantrax listener leagues. Keepers were due this week. I finally got the last sort of updated information today, and so I'm going to get that out. But one of those two leagues, we're ready to draft Monday. All of the keepers are in. Have you looked at that? Do you have anything that sort of surprised you?
I haven't looked at it only because I haven't figured it out. Do I just click on the draft room?
If you go to the draft room, you'll see where players are already slotted in.
Okay, and that's League 2, right? That's the head-to-head, or am I off?
The head-to-head, yes. No, you're okay. Right, head-to-head.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to go through that. I had some tough decisions to make, and I don't know if I made the right decisions, but what worked for me
Sorry,
last...
it's not League 2. My bad, it's League 1.
Okay, so that's where...
It's the roto.
That's the roto where we did the... So I had no hard decisions to make because we did the draft in that one, and that was pretty straightforward. I was tempted to maybe not keep somebody. Looking at the draft board right now, it's no surprise that like most people tried to keep a player who went in that 28th round to get those picks. There's definitely some awesome values down there. We do see like Marcus Semien being kept there in the first round. I mean, that's Bogart.
I was surprised. There were three first round picks. Three teams that kept a player giving up their first round pick. And honestly, even the three second rounds, like I think people were too aggressive. I think some teams were too aggressive about keeping their best players instead of their best values.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, I wouldn't have kept any of these players. I mean, these are our listeners. I love you guys. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Any of these players going the first three rounds, I wouldn't have kept a single one of them. That the only tempting one is Sandy, but it's
I was
going
to say, I think not tempting. I think Gausman was a little tempting. So
Gausman for a third, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can understand it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean, he is awesome. So.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, if I go, let's take a look at, NFBC ADP is a bad example for this because it's not the same.
Right.
Gausman for a third. You're right. That's a little aggressive. Arenado. Did Arenado get picked for a third? Kept for a third?
Yeah, you're right. That one's okay. That's actually
really good. That's a pretty
good one. Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah. Lindor in the second, fine. I can sort of understand. I can see some of it, but I think some of these teams were more interested in keeping their best players rather than their best values. I'm also looking at this and realizing, because of the way we did our draft order selection, you have the first pick in this draft, don't you?
Oh man, I do. That
is that you?
Beautiful.
You are the Blue Sox.
That would be me. And I
have the second pick.
You have the second pick. I pick in the first nine rounds. My first keeper off the board is a 10th round O'Neill Cruz, which I love. So all of a sudden, you know, we had to break up our nice roster, but I'm feeling pretty good here.
Yeah, I have the only pick in my first 10 that I'm giving up is a fifth to keep Jazz. So I'm okay with that too. Yeah, I've been messing around with the draft board, with my draft board a little bit, and trying to figure out what I'm going to do.
Oh, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do right now. You know what I'm going to do right away with the first overall pick? I am going to take a man by the name of Jose Ramirez.
Are you?
To plug up third base? Yeah, I think so.
Interesting.
Yeah.
We'll
see. But it's not a long way away.
I'm not going to hold you to that. Although by the time anybody hears this, they may know, because this thing starts that morning.
That's true.
And I'm looking, I'm realizing I have three. I'm already keeping three outfielders and two middle infielders. And that doesn't include Jazz, who is both. And so when I start looking at the draft, the top of the draft board, and it's like, do I want Trey Turner, who's a guy who I like taking first overall? This is weekly lineup, so like Ohtani is not a consideration for me with one of the top two picks in a weekly lineup setup, even though you get both versions of Ohtani. I have to make a decision each week which one I'm using, and so now I'm wondering if maybe I should be annoyed that you're taking Ramirez, because he would actually really fit my roster well right now. The way I've got my roster sort of set up at the moment, I'm assuming Jazz at second, Tovar at short, and Andrés Giménez at middle infield. And then I've got Santander, Knute Barr, and Harris as my three outfielders so far.
I have you looked at at Fantrax's rankings? What's going on here? Rafael Devers is the 107th ranked player.
Really?
Is something wrong with, like, Cole Irvin is ranked 53 for me right now. So I don't know what is going on here, but this cannot possibly be their ranking. So that is going to throw me off. So maybe I will change my mind when it comes to Jose Ramirez, when I actually see everybody that is truly available. But
So I'm looking at their rankings right now. They have Jose first, Turner second, Kyle Tucker third.
Okay, yeah. So
Ohtani fourth.
Mine are crazy looking.
Do you have like some weird sorting on it?
I don't think so. No.
Huh.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll figure it out. Whatever.
Yeah, I mean, looking at this, I think one of the things I have to ask myself, given who I kept, I'm looking at who you kept. Like, you kept Cruz. You kept a handful of pitchers. Then you have Kirk. You have a bunch of pitchers. My goodness, you kept so many pitchers.
Six, I didn't even realize it. Eight or seven of my nine.
You have Kirby, Lodolo, Gonsolin. Then Devin Williams is a closer. McKenzie, Severino, and Duvall is a closer. So that's two closers and five starters, along with a shortstop and a catcher.
Yep.
Interesting. So, This is we're back in form. We're back to where we're supposed to be, because I kept Framber Valdez and Tyler Glasnow and David Bednar, and then I have six bats, the three outfielders and the three middle infielders. I don't know. I feel like I have some options here, because I kept a decent amount of speed between Harris and Giménez and Jazz. Like, I kept a decent amount of speed, and so I sort of feel like I don't have to worry about that. I mean, I'm going to need speed at some point. I don't have enough. Right, maybe you never have enough speed, but like in a roto season long league, like I can't just like rely on the speed I have. But like, I was taking a look, I set some targets for myself for what I need to have by the end of this draft, and I figured I need to have about 120 stolen bases. That would put me in the top two or three in stolen bases from based on what this league was last year. Based on projections, I have 85 in my lineup already. About 20, 25 from Jazz, 10 to 15 from Tovar, 20, 25 from Giménez, 20-ish from Harris, Santander chips in one, Knute Barr chips in five. Ended up, I basically calculated out to be about 85. If I only need 35 more steals from the rest of the draft, I don't feel like I have to focus on that with my first pick, which opens up the possibility of just saying, forget it, I'm taking Aaron Judge.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. I have made no decisions. I don't know. Well, now I'm wondering if I'm just, I don't know.
It's relieving to not have to worry about stolen bases. So at least there's that, because it is a rotisserie league. So stolen bases and saves, you can't punt them, at least not in my opinion. That's why I wanted to make sure. I mean, it was a while ago. I don't know if you remember the draft, but I wanted to make sure I got that Devin Williams. And I was really pumped to get that one and had no problem taking even Camilo Duvall a little bit later. But now my hitting needs to be filled in, which kind of makes drafting a little bit easier. You know, like,
you know, it's a target.
Exactly. But man, Alejandro Kirk's upside is kind of limited. You know, I think he's very good for what he is. And then there's O'Neal Cruz, who could finish all over the place. I mean, I could have the worst offense in the league. So I got some work to do here.
So let me ask you this. You come up in the second round. You're picking, you know, end of the second, top of the third. Fernando Tatis Jr. is still on the board. You taking him?
Man, it's Roto, so it does matter that he's missing a month. Probably not. There's so many names here. It would be a tough call. Maybe because my offense up to that point has only so much upside relative to everybody else's, and I might feel like I need to fill that gap. But and I to be fair, as I said earlier, I don't view Tatis as risky as everybody else. But there's no risk involved. Like, the fact he's going to miss a month is what it is. That's not a risk thing. That's just a fact. So
that's just a fact. Yeah.
No.
All right. Let's see. Well, by the time we record again, that draft will probably be complete. By the time you're listening to this, that draft has probably started, and so it'll probably be over by then. And so in our next episode, we'll have an update on that draft. We should have our other listener league up and running by then to get that draft. We'll have some news on that. We'll let you know more about this podcaster league, all sorts of stuff going on. But we've been going for a good long time here, so we're going to let you get on with your day. We're going to get on with our night. Pete's got 12 minutes left in his night, so let you go before it's already Sunday. But with that, thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.